Welcome to the Remote Tech People podcast. As more teams move to a remote-first work environment, we'll be interviewing leaders to share their insights, challenges, and advice in making their transition. We believe in the many benefits of a remote-first workplace for technology professionals and are keen to share advice in making remote-first a success. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome, Jessica, to an episode of Remote Tech People podcast. Jess, I know from Remote Social. I'm actually an investor in Remote Social early days, really excited about the product and also one of the problems that it can fix for the current space where we're living in a hybrid or remote workspace. But for those that don't know who Remote Social is, I don't know your background, Jess, could you give us a bit of an overview?
Absolutely. So we're an early stage startup based in Sydney. We're three co-founders and we're on a mission to solve the issue of building really strong cultures in remote and hybrid organizations. It's one of the most difficult things about working remotely is how do you build up the same sense of deep loyalty to an organization, the same sorts of deep relationships within a team and within an organization when you don't sit together every day. So that's the problem that Remote Social is looking to solve. Our first foray into the product that we've built has been around solving for those special social moments. And we've got a bunch of games live on the platform, as well as a whole range of hosted experiences that are well suited to virtual delivery for remote and hybrid teams.
Very nice overview. Because I completely agree. I feel like our team's moved completely remotely and has been throughout COVID, like many organizations. And we've actually used a couple of those experiences to try to create a version of the culture that you can build by spending time and experiences together. Have you found that that's the biggest issue? And that's the biggest issue that Remote Social is solving for companies, the lack of experiences of people can get to spend time with each other that corporates are facing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty well acknowledged that that's one of the most challenging areas of running remote and hybrid teams. For us, our product is still very much in its infancy, and we've got a very, very big and rich vision of how we can support businesses moving forward. Games is one part of what we think of as the culture stack within a remote and hybrid organization, because we don't think it's one, but there are many facets to culture. So we're solving a few of those. The first element that we set out to provide to organizations is the games component. The second is hosted experiences. And the third, which we're in the process of introducing now through a product called Remote Social Connect, is deeper and more meaningful ways to connect with your colleagues asynchronously. So that don't necessarily require you to be online at the same time on a video call, for example, but you can do it at a time that suits you in a very flexible manner through existing business tools. So to start off with, we've integrated with Slack, and there are other integrations coming with other business tools that enable people to share and create conversation and moments that don't necessarily require people to be online at the same time. Culture is a really multifaceted and a big issue for remote and hybrid teams. The one thing that we say both internally as a team and that we've learned from all of our years working in global remote and hybrid teams is that building very strong cultures in these organizations is all about intentionality. You need to be very intentional about how you create cultures for your teams in these environments. And we want to put really powerful tools at the fingertips of team leads and managers in order to be able to enable them to do that.
Very nice. And have you found most companies are doing this reactively, as in we've seen an issue or we're struggling with culture and now we're going to look at a product like Remote Social? Or is it more companies trying to be on the front foot and proactively looking at this?
I think there's everything on a spectrum from, you know, our people are really disengaged, we need something like a quick energy booster to do this Friday, through to really forward-thinking companies who are employing people to help them with these programs for us, one of the things that we do as we onboard new customers is we talk to them about the way they're planning for engaging their people over the long term and building these really strong bonds and strong cultures within their teams. And again, going back to that question about intentionality, it's, you know, you need to do the planning, you need to make sure that you're thinking about how you do this. And that goes all the way back to how you think about budgets. Obviously, remote teams are undergoing a kind of fundamental reckoning, or every team rather is undergoing a fundamental reckoning of how they think about where their people will sit and how they will interact with the organization.
With companies that are looking out to tools like remote social, are you finding it they're doing it reactively because, hey, they're seeing an issue or a cultural issue arise within their organization? Or is it more of a proactive approach?
I think there's everything on the spectrum, James, from people who are very reactive to people who are much more deliberate and intentional about it. We think it starts from, you know, best practice starts from everything from how you think about how you budget for culture within a remote and hybrid organization. We don't think it should be allocating sort of ad hoc, but rather you should be thinking 6 to 12 months in advance about how you are funding your cultural needs within the organization and allowing team leads, or if you have a head of remote or a head of HR, allowing them the budget and the freedom to be able to be very intentional and creative about the ways in which they do that. I think what we are certainly seeing is that teams that are more intentional about it are getting better ROI on their culture spends, and it's inevitably leading to much stronger engagement and better programming within these organizations.
Very nice. You made mention just then of a head of remote. I don't think it's a job title that existed 6 months ago, 12 months ago. Have you seen more of those type of roles, specific somebody focusing on the remote work within organizations?
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, I think it's probably a little bit more prevalent with international organizations than it has become here in Australia yet. But everyone should expect to see more of these sorts of titles. It's becoming harder and harder to attract, particularly in the technical space. It's becoming harder and harder to attract people to desk-based 5 days a week in the office roles. I think everybody's looking for flexibility, and that means that organizations have to necessarily be very, very forward-thinking about how they engage that talent. And that means providing people with the flexibility that they need in order to be able to do their best work.
Yeah, I completely agree. That talent shortage is a massive thing, and flexibility is very high on the list of demands and motivations for technical talent.
100%. I don't know whether you're hearing this from the teams that you work with, but certainly with a lot of the teams that we've been working with, particularly with technical roles, but increasingly with operational roles as well. That's one of the first questions that hiring managers are being asked is, where will this job be based? And am I required to be in the office? And I think people like to have the option to go into the office. So I think hybrid is quite attractive to people, providing it is quite flexible. And there's that ability really to be able to work from anywhere with the option to go into the office, rather than a set requirement to go into the office 2, 3, 4, 5 days a week. And because there are so many roles out there for technical talent, if they're being mandated to go into the office even 2 days a week, they're straight on to the next opportunity because they're not willing to sign on for that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the other part you mentioned there, that hybrid work, I think there's going to be fully remote and there's going to be fully in office. Those fully in office will really struggle to hire. But that hybrid approach, I think, is where most people will land. I've done quite a little bit of research around this space, and the mentality of, even if you are in a hybrid environment, being a remote first environment, as in having the tools there. So people that are remote, if others are in the office, aren't second grade citizens. Is that a challenge that is very real in the market?
Absolutely. We've spoken to hundreds of businesses across the world, and all different sizes of businesses, from small teams to big multinational organizations. And the vast majority of teams are saying we're going to be hybrid moving forward. But that actually means something totally different to every single one of those organizations. For some teams, it means they're going to expect everyone in the office 2 days a week on the same days. In some businesses, they're reducing their real estate footprints, and they'll have people on a rotating basis. And in some teams, hybrid means 4 times a year in the office, which I would probably classify more as remote, but people certainly are speaking about that as one version of hybrid. When we think about what the core of remote social is all about, it's about building a product and a platform that levels the playing field regardless of how many times you see your colleagues, whether it's 4 times a year or once a year, never, or 2 days a week. Because as you say, you really run the risk if you're running this hybrid strategy of ending up with one class of employee and team member that has all the organizational context, has all the relationships, and is there therefore, you know, well empowered to execute very well on their role. And then you have people who are lacking the information in order to be able to best function within the organization and within the team. So leveling the playing field, I think, is table stakes within a consideration of what hybrid actually means for your organization. And that's one of the things that we're setting out to do with remote social. I think relationships and context are really at the crux of leveling the playing field for remote employee. And we're super excited as we continue to roll out product features about really being able to support organizations to do that.
Yeah, I think one of the common challenges people are saying they miss is the water cooler chat and not being in the office, or having some people in the office and some people not, are the challenge for those that are remote. Missing that water cooler chat is a very real thing.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to context. It's like part of working in an office is seeing people, and kind of you learn about them through osmosis. You learn about their family, about their pets, about the things that interest them, what they did on the weekend. And it's a really big transition to sharing those sorts of things in a natural way in a virtual environment. So one of the things that we're doing with remote social, you know, remote social connect that I mentioned before, that delivers the ability for people to be able to do that in a more organic way without one person necessarily having to constantly lead the conversation around water cooler, that sort of supports some of those conversations within teams. And I think when we think about the virtual environment, I think we're all upskilling into what it means to get really comfortable with sharing in a meaningful way without it feeling transactional in a digital and virtual environment, because historically we've been so accustomed to doing that in the office if we haven't worked in a remote or hybrid team. So I think it's super important for managers to, as I said before, be really intentional about it and make sure that you create space for people to do that, because I think the more we flex that muscle of sharing, whether it be over Slack or a video call, the more we get used to that being, you know, an important way that we share, and not just going into these conversations with the idea of like, I've got to get X piece of work done, but really understanding the validity of creating space for people to have those conversations that are going to enable them to build up those less formal, less project-based, but really, really important bonds.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the other things you mentioned earlier today was the ability to have communication without having to be on video. I think a lot of people, once we moved to remote, was all about, oh, we'll catch up for a Zoom call of a morning, or all our meetings will be on Zoom and we'll do beers over Zoom or conversations over Zoom on a Friday afternoon. But the other challenge, I guess, with remote has been Zoom fatigue, and that being a very real thing that's being spoken about. How do you guys, or remote social, or you individually, think about video, Zoom fatigue, and where does that fit within the greater communication?
Yeah, well, I think that first of all, Zoom and video conferencing, I mean, where would we be without them is sort of the first thing I think. But I absolutely agree that too much time on video calls is completely draining, and I think the fatigue that comes with that is very, very real. I also think that people have to be deliberate about the way they use video conferencing meetings. I don't know that there's necessarily a requirement to be on a video call for 45 minutes where maybe picking up the phone or jumping on a Slack message is a much more efficient way to get to where you're wanting to go. And I think with asynchronous communication, that's really I think increasingly being acknowledged as being a crucial part of the toolkit for remote and hybrid teams, because it doesn't require you to be online at the same time. It does require you to be disciplined in the way that you use those tools. So it's not just constant back and forth. And it does require you to be quite disciplined in the way that you document the work that you're doing so that you can hand over to people who may not be online at the same time. But it's really, really important that remote and hybrid teams get accustomed to that asynchronous way of communicating. And we're really leaning into that in remote social, providing ways for people to be able to do that. And that for us is going to be a strategy that we're doubling down on to make it more and more possible for people to be able to create those important bonds and special moments, even if they're not online at the same time. I would say as well is that I think the next evolution from not necessarily working in the office 5 days a week is that the typical 9-to-5 workday is on its way out in the way that we've known it historically, and asynchronous is going to be a really, really important component to true flexibility. I think as people get more accustomed to being able to work from home, particularly for parents, for example, they might be in a situation where they, you know, have loved working from home and now they're saying, I'm going to work from 8 until 3:30. I'm going to pick my kid up. I'm going to, you know, give them dinner, and then I'm going to be back online from 7 to 10. And I think the next evolution of work is going to be allowing that true flexibility so that people are able to incorporate work and life in a way that historically would have been very, very difficult in a 9-to-5 office environment.
I completely agree. I feel like that will happen as well and help solve another challenge we're facing in the mass talent shortage. At the moment, people or companies are really looking for people to be working on the same time zone. So if even in Australia, if we're looking to hire, for companies looking to hire remotely, companies that are based on the East Coast are looking for East Coast based employees. And I feel like that asynchronous style communication will allow people to, or companies to hire either both on different time zones, but also then into different countries. I feel like that will really open up that talent pool. Do you have any companies or insights into companies that have done that well?
Well, I think it's absolutely the way forward. And as you say, asynchronous is going to be a fundamental enabler of that. We have a number of organizations within our sort of that worked with us in our beta that are now customers of Remote Social who have, for example, teams that are all around the world. And there's no time that they can actually get together online at the same time to have even a weekly call, because it's always going to be 3 o'clock in the morning for someone. And so being really deliberate about the way that they create those meetings, create those schedules so that people can still have, going back to context that we talked about before, can still have the context and still have all the information that they need to do their job. I think it's just going to become increasingly important and accepted as the way forward to run a really successful distributed organization. And I think if you look back to the pioneers of remote, GitLab's, you know, there's a list of, you know, pretty well established remote organizations that really pioneered what sort of top level remote working looks like, best in class remote working looks like. And certainly those organizations have leaned into asynchronous for some time. I think it's just taken the rest of the world a bit longer to catch on. And that's definitely where we're headed.
Yeah, I think it's taken us longer to catch on, but we're still super early days with this. And we're only here because of COVID, right? I feel like we would have got here, but it might have been 10 years down the track. I feel like we were going to get to a remote or hybrid approach, but it was maybe 10 years away. And COVID just really forced every organization to go that way and then realize that we can go that way. We've just had to skip a lot of the little steps that you would have had in place if you're proactive and intentional about it. Most organizations were forced into remote. Everything was extremely reactive, and trying to then put in tools and processes in place retrospectively. And I feel like that's where a lot of the challenges have come from, right?
Yeah, I agree. It's very interesting. My two co-founders and I had all had the experience of working in both global teams as well as either remote or hybrid, or in my case, both, before COVID. So I think we all knew that the undercurrents were there for remote work, but I absolutely agree that COVID has been the catalyst for really, really rapid change. And in many ways, changes that we don't have the products to be able to support, the purpose-built tools, which is why remote social exists. Those issues that we saw in the organizations that we worked in before, taking some of those best practices and things that we would have liked to have had at our disposal in those organizations, and really productizing those to put best-in-class solutions in for everyone, not just the handful of teams that have had 10 years plus experience of working remotely.
Yeah, nice. I feel like I'm being negative or throwing challenges at you around this remote space. I'm definitely pro-remote. But another one of those challenges that I think a lot of organizations have faced is the onboarding process. And companies, again, retrospectively trying to figure that out. What does onboarding look like done remotely? Have you seen any companies do that extremely well? Any tips that you would give organizations to onboard? I feel like it fits into the culture piece really strongly. How do you onboard people, get them introduced to people? How do you get them to understand the organization, the culture, etc.? Have you seen or have got any examples of companies that have done that well?
Yeah, I think you can't rely obviously on the practices that you would have in an office environment. And certainly to your point about onboarding being a crucial part of culture, is we're now seeing a whole generation of employees, or rather a whole sort of life cycle of employees, who have been onboarded in the last 18 months and in many cases have never met any of their colleagues and are now moving on to their next opportunity, which means that you have had a whole kind of employee life cycle where they haven't really had any tangible touch points in sort of human to human contact with other people within the organization. So if you think about how intentional you have to be in order to be able to really drive connection and loyalty with people who have never met anyone in your team, I think that kind of gives you an insight into how important it is to be very deliberate about the onboarding process. Onboarding, whether you're remote or in person, is an incredibly sensitive time period for any new employee. The way you onboard and offboard ultimately will determine how that person thinks about your organization long term. And so the best organizations, very, very deliberate in the way that they set that up for their employees. And that includes everything from having packs go out to that employee ahead of time, to having a very, very deliberate documented onboarding strategy, to having more written communications and practices in place, to have really clear processes for giving them buddies when they're onboarding into the organization, and to have, you know, much better documentation than a lot of hiring managers would typically have, because I think in many cases that is still done kind of by osmosis, by sitting alongside people and kind of going through things together. Certainly best-in-class remote organizations have much more deliberate strategies than that. Internally, we have a product that we have built ourselves, which we've been asked for it by a number of people that we've showed it to. It's not part of our immediate roadmap, but certainly I think that there's a lot of room for someone to do that remote onboarding really well. And we're definitely thinking about how that plays into our product longer term.
Yeah, you mentioned the word earlier in this podcast, culture stack. And I feel like it's definitely within that stack. I feel like that onboarding process, if done well, extremely successful. And you mentioned the buddy approach there. I'd not heard of that before, but it sounds really interesting about having somebody paired up for those early weeks.
Yeah, I think one of the things in a remote team is that you lack the visibility that you would typically have in an office environment. In an office environment, you go, you meet people, they know that you're there, you naturally share information, you probably have someone that you're sitting next to that you can ask where the bathroom is, or ask the good place to have lunch, or ask what that person over there does, or, you know, a question on how an organization actually works, which often is wildly different to what the org structure actually says. And so, you know, that's certainly one thing that we've seen work quite well, is to make sure that people have a counterpart within the organization that can help to guide them through some of that process, because it can be incredibly isolating to start on a new team where you know, in many cases, that team, if they weren't remote before, they have had years to build up that context and have had years to build up the in-jokes and the rapport and all the funny things and what is essentially the culture of that team. It can be really hard coming in as a new starter onboarded remotely to get up to speed with all of that. And so we're really thinking about ways that we can help to accelerate that for people, because I think having deep connections with your colleagues is really the starting point to feeling a strong sense of purpose at work and ultimately to being successful in your role.
Yeah. And then on the flip side of that, success for the company to have productive employees that are happy being there and doing well in what they do.
Yeah. I mean, you would know better than anyone is, you know, high employee churn and low engagement is that's really costly for organizations. So the more that organizations can do to build that deep sense of loyalty and connection to mission and a sense of community within their employees, that is not just like very practical, but it's actually a great investment, because ultimately it will lead to lower churn rates, higher engagement, higher productivity, and is ultimately very good for the bottom line.
Yeah, for sure. I think that it's another interesting point that'll come up over the next however many years is tenure within an organization, especially for technical talent. Technical talent tend to do a couple of years in a role and then look for something new unless they're being continually challenged or promoted or given something new within an organization. So employee talent, like tenure within an organization, especially if they don't feel as attached to the person or to the organization, will be really interesting to look at, because churn is, yeah, obviously not profitable and really hurts company.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that's all about how you engage people and how connected they feel to the work that they're doing.
Yeah. And for a lot of companies, it won't, like putting these things and being intentional about it won't happen until they felt the pain of that tenure really starting, or the churn starting to really turn up. And I feel like that's where companies, not all companies, but some will become reactive to the pain that they're facing.
I think from a cultural perspective, one of the things that we think about a lot is that you still have a lot of teams that have culture they've built up over years that they're relying on in the virtual environment. As employees move on, as those employees start to turn over, even if they've been with the organization for 3, 4, 5 years, you know, eventually most of those employees are going to move on. And unless you're intentional about bringing new starters on and along for the ride and onboarding and making them feel part of the organization so you can keep them for 3, 4, 5 years, not 18 to 24 months. Very quickly, once those original employees and those groups have moved on, I think people will find that they're much more susceptible to cultural issues than they thought, because they can no longer rely on the historical in-person cultures that they had pre-COVID.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I completely agree with you. I think it's really good insights. Mm-hmm. So, Fleming, you've obviously got a lot of experience with this space. So I wouldn't mind us sort of wrapping up the interview, just getting some tips from you with both your experiences and what you've seen with other organizations. So if we just roll through getting a few tips from you, if you had your time over working remotely, the process from or forming a company, building a company, working with teams, if you had your time over from a remote perspective, would you do anything majorly different?
Well, I think with remote social, it's very important for us to live by the problem that we're trying to solve. So we're a hybrid organization. We have very, very flexible workplace practices. We have a team member offshore, 2 team members that don't live in Sydney, some team members that live in Sydney. And really, I think the most important thing is to, as I said before, be intentional. For us, that's about living by the problem that we're trying to solve. If we can't do it for ourselves, I don't think we could hope to solve that problem for our customers. And so I think it's about for any team and any team manager to really think about the environment that they want to create and how they're going to get the best out of and for their team members. So I'd say that's table stakes. And for us, we've done that since day one, because all 3 of us had the experience of living and working in remote environments. So that was, you know, very much going to be part of our ethos from day one.
Perfect. You mentioned before your team works quite flexibly, flexible work hours and things like that. what does a daily routine look like for you? How do you remain? I'm going to start that one again. You mentioned your team works flexibly, not only with workspaces, but also work hours. How do you manage your daily routine and stay productive through that?
Well, I've got three kids. So for me, it's making sure that I have carved out the time to be present for them. I typically get up pretty early. I'm an avid runner. So for me to be ultimately as productive as I can be, that includes some form of exercise in the mornings, at least 4 or 5 days a week. So that's just a non-negotiable for me. So I'm up early and I'm at the gym normally before the kids get up. And then I'll get the kids ready, get them to school. And then whether I'm in the office, which will probably be 2 or potentially 3 days a week, I'll be in the office and kind of working through. We've got great kind of collaboration tools from Trello, which we use to collaborate with our team, obviously Slack, Zoom. I think it's all about having the right tools at your fingertips to keep work aligned with your team. And then most of the time I'll get home to give the kids dinner and log on after they're in bed. And on the days, 1 or 2 days a week, if I've got to be around after school, I'll pick them up and then log back on later in the day. And I think that's something that we're encouraging our teammates to do as well, whether it's, surfing in the afternoon because the surf's up and then they log back on later in the day. For us, we're all about being an output-based organization, not a time on seat organization. Ultimately, I think that is what drives really strong kind of productivity within a team, because we definitely have very big ambitions and we're not looking to reduce the output. I think all of the research shows that the more you can offer your employees the ability to have true balance, the better productivity outcomes you get. And so that's the team we're building.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I think as a fellow parent myself, I've got three kids also, I feel like those hours after the kids are in bed, for me, that's some of my most productive hours through the week. There doesn't tend to be as many people online at that time. There's less distractions. So I think from 8 p.m. till midnight for me, sometimes is my most productive hours of the week.
Yeah, I think particularly for getting through little like admin things that can hang over your head during the day is like just making sure you've got a really, really tight list of things that you've got to get through and punching those out. And even if you only do that one night a week and you work through from 8 until midnight and you get through, that really takes the burden off and allows you to be a bit more present in your day-to-day with your team is what I find.
Yeah, exactly the same. That one night a week devoted to that opens up so much other time. So I completely agree. Tools for working remotely. You mentioned Trello, Slack, Zoom, obviously remote social tools.
Obviously remote social, yeah.
The stack for your team.
Yeah, so we use Trello for the non-technical people within our team typically use Trello. Obviously, Jira is a big one for technical teams. So all of our sort of engineering and product work gets done in Jira. We use Confluence for knowledge management and documentation. Going back to what we were talking about before with asynchronous communication, our team and particularly the founders on our team, we're constantly trying to document our thinking and publish it in Confluence to help bring the team along with us as the business evolves and as we are thinking about kind of strategy and direction, documenting that in Confluence in a way that people can read and digest it and come back to us with questions in their own time. Obviously, Slack as well is, I think we mentioned that before, but Slack is an amazing tool and they've introduced some incredible features this year. But for us, Slack is a really crucial tool. I think intentionality is really, really important there because it can be really, really easy in a remote environment where you've got all these tools to just become overwhelmed and overloaded. So I think those tools are all really important. I think in every team, you have to be intentional about the way you use those. The communications that should go by email are not the same the communications that should go by Slack. And so I think it's really the role of a team lead within an organization or higher up in the organization to really think about how their teams are going to use each of these tools and make sure that they've got that documented so that it's not incredibly overwhelming for people and so that you have communications going out in the way that they should.
That's phenomenal. I think the biggest thing I've learned from you today is that word intentional and companies being intentional about the way they are tackling remote hybrid approaches. I feel like that's the biggest takeaway for me individually. So I really appreciate your time.
Well, I hope I haven't been too much like a broken record on the use of that word, but I do think it's at the heart of building strong teams as we move forward. Is it doesn't happen by accident. We have to really think through how we're going to build these strong teams and support the future of work that we're all leaning into.
I appreciate your time today.
Thanks, James. Really appreciate it. Thank you. All right, bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Remote Tech People. For all our podcast episodes, as well as job opportunities and more advice around remote working, please visit remotetechpeople.com.au.